Welcome to VFN Radio's Extra Hour. I'm your host, Greg Lancaster, and joining me is the producer of VFN Radio program, Pat Hamilton.
Hello, hello.
You're listening to VFN Radio, where we are keeping the conversation light. That's L-I-G-H-T, light. If you missed the first hour, we just invested that hour in focusing on the part of the Constitution of the Church. The Sermon on the Mount, the words of Jesus, what God said to us about murder and hate and love. And you got to listen to it. If you want to hear it in its entirety, go to VFNTV.com and watch it on VFNTV. The title of it is Murder, Love's Not an Option. It is amazing when you hear what God said to us. Also, we're going to have it in this extra hour is Dr. Ben Carson, Moments in a First of Three Parts of an Interview, as just the man of wisdom. And he's talking about his own personal journey and how he got in a lot of fights and a lot of hatred in his heart when he was young, before he met God. But when he met love himself, it changed. He changed his life. We're also going to be talking about 3D printing. 3D printing. They're printing guns now, and they're even printing an organ, like an ear, with a printer. I'm just trying to get this paper jam out of my copier printer right now. And so much more. You are listening to VFN Radio's Extra Hour, where we're keeping the conversation light. I'm your host, Greg Lancaster, and joining me is the producer, Pat Hamilton.
Hello.
I was so encouraged to hear you begin to understand that if you want to go to heaven, you're going to have to love Tony Romo. That's like, that was really good. It was just like really encouraging, you know?
That's all right.
Oh my goodness! I just can't wait till you guys have dinner together and hear how that goes.
All right, don't push it.
Wash me, Jesus. Wash me, Lord. Wash me.
Moving on.
Not me.
Yeah, I'm just letting it kind of just silent. Okay, listen, they are printing guns now. Mm-hmm. They're printing guns. I know we had a segment. You could see it on the VFN Torch. By the way, if you have not yet seen The Torch, you got to go to The Torch. You go to VFNTV.com and click on The Torch. You'll see a torch burning on the right-hand side, but you think about it, it's like Gideon in Gideon's army, where they had this torch. And what the torch really is, it's a light, L-I-G-H-T, conversation about God, its word, and what's happening, God's news behind the news. Now, our precept upon precept teaching of the word is on VFN TV, and it is detailed from the scriptures. But we're having a conversation about what we need to have a perspective, a God perspective, a light, L-I-G-H-T perspective, because God told us, you know, to be the light of the world, let our light shine, shout it from the rooftops. But understand this, that so you can go to the VFN Torch, go to VFNTV.com and click on the torch, just click on the flame, and it will take you right to the torch. And any topic that you want to, that you have a question about, or you want to hear something about, or be encouraged about, or find out God's news behind the news about it, up in the upper right-hand corner, it has a little search box. You just put your little cursor there, start typing in whatever you're interested in, whatever you're being led to listen to, and it'll give you the options of different ones that you can listen to. Of course, the programs, if you're looking for a certain program, you can go also and click on episodes, and you can hear, you can see any previous full episodes of VFN Radio. But what you'll see is printing ears, where they're printing organs now. And I watched it. You'll see a video of them actually printing the ear.
Wow.
But now, because you have all these gun controls and things going on. As a matter of fact, listen to CBN News. CBN News is reporting on the 3D printing. It's amazing what they're doing now.
Well, 3D printing is revolutionizing the way we make things in the U.S. President Obama even praised the technology in his State of the Union address.
But a Texas man's 3D creation has the government stepping in and blocking distribution. Ephraim Graham reports on how 3D printing may have just gotten lethal.
This is the world's first 3D printed plastic gun. 25-year-old law student Cody Wilson has been working on the prototype for more than a year. Now his group, Defense Distributed, claims it succeeded. It's called the Liberator, and it's made from the $8,000 Stratasys 3D printer.
That was always the goal. The entire goal from the beginning was, can you print a gun on a 3D printer? Can you do it?
Wilson released the blueprints online for anyone to download, but the State Department quickly stepped in and blocked the company from distributing the details, citing international arms control laws. New York Senator Chuck Schumer and several other members of Congress are calling for 3D printed guns to be made illegal.
A terrorist, someone who's mentally ill, a spousal abuser, a felon, can essentially open a gun factory in their garage. And the only thing they need, a computer and a little over $1,000.
Lawmakers also worry the plastic guns would be untraceable, but advocates of the guns disagree.
I don't think there's any practical danger of somebody printing an untraceable weapon, and even if they did, the round would most certainly set off metal detectors.
Ballistic experts also warn firing a gun made from plastic could be lethal to the user. The pressure involved in firing a bullet could put too much stress on the plastic exterior. Meanwhile, Wilson's blueprints were downloaded more than 100,000 times before the State Department stepped in. But in the U.S., companies with 3D printing capabilities say they can't produce the device because of laws against production of such weapons. Ephraim Graham, CBN News.
This is wild. They can print organs and print guns, and I don't like that. You know, I don't know about all that kind of stuff, you know, because you think about it, we have laws that protect us from felons and those who have lost it in their mental capabilities from getting guns. But if all they have is a printer, a computer, and $1,000, then they can print a weapon, you know, and
untraceable at that.
Untraceable. And that's amazing, though, what is taking place. You could print a gun.
Wow.
Well, you know, you understand that we're creating the image and the likeness of God. Mankind's creating the image and the likeness of God. And this is what you can read about it in Genesis when he says, let's create man in our image, in our likeness. Well, God is a creative. He's a creator. And if we're created in his image and his likeness, we have the ability to create. I mean, you look at all the different things that's happened and since the world's began, and, you know, men build things, men create things, and over the last 125 years, 150 years, probably 125 years, since 1900, it's amazing all the things that have been created and invented. Most of the patents were delivered, I think like 90% of all patents, maybe more than that now, was since 1900. Prior to that, was very few inventions. And, but it's important to realize this, that just because you can doesn't mean you should. Just because you can create a tower that goes up and, you know, God says, hey, whatever they've said in their mind to do, they can do. Just because we can do something as Christians doesn't mean we should, nor should we support something just because you can do it. Because there is no limit to what somebody who's made in the image and the likeness of the Creator until the Creator himself limits it.
Right.
And, you know, as knowledge and wisdom increase, we can more and more begin. I mean, they can print food, Pat.
Food?
They're printing. It's reportedly they're printing food. I saw them print an ear.
Can you eat it?
We can. If you can print an ear, a living organ ear, They printed it. It would go like a dot matrix type printer type thing. And it was just gradually inject DNA upon this particular material, and it would just stack it in the right strand order it had to be in, and they eventually had the ear, which would go under the skin, because you have one organ, which is the skin, but the ear itself is actually under the
skin.
Yeah, cartilage, and it's living, and then they would stick it into this particular incubator or whatever, and it would just grow. Mitosis, I guess, and all that stuff would happen for the cells.
Wow.
And then they were looking at people like a soldier that lost his ear or her ear in battle, or a child. There's a particular, you can find out more details on the torch, but that a child was born without an ear. There's certain kind of diseases that you don't have an ear. And that's pretty cool. You know, they could, but it's like, it's an organ, so I don't know. And where did the, and it's like, just because we can, does that mean we should?
Right.
You know, and we're at this point right now where the only thing that's holding most back is the access to resources. And you think about some of the things that God has been, you know, showing us, that maybe there's a reboot coming to the whole world. You know, reboot is what you do to the computer when everything's locking up or whatever. You just shut it all down and bring it back up again. And a reboot humbles a generation. It humbles a nation, a people.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, you can't do what you could do anymore. You're just focused on, hey, we need some food and some water right now.
Right.
And that's what happened with the Tower of Babel when they started building this tower up. And they said, we're going to build it to the till it reaches the heavens. And God heard about it, and he had some angels sent down to be able to find out what was going on. And this is what he said. He says, listen, if they continue on because they're unified with this vision, they can accomplish it.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go down and confuse their language. That is called reboot. That's a reboot. I mean, it's like 5 minutes ago, you're going like, hey, how are you doing? Grab that brick over there. We're going to build a tower.
Right.
And all of a sudden they go, yo no hablo ese inglés. It's like, what happened there?
Right.
You know, parlez vous français. You know, all of a sudden they're just speaking these different languages. Mm-hmm. Could be in Gawa. I don't know what language was. But that's called a reboot. And that was important because if that reboot wouldn't happen, they would have continued to print guns. They would have continued to take DNA from babies and take that DNA from aborted children and begin to create organs and try to create life.
All right.
It's time for a reboot, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, definitely.
It's a reboot. And if we care about mankind, it's like, hey, I mean, that's it. You know, what are you doing today? I'm going to go plant some seed, milk the goat, you know, make some cheese. You know, a world without hot sauce.
Oh, no.
How do you grow habanero peppers or whatever that is, right?
Exactly.
So, I mean, they're printing guns. And you can see this video. Go to VFN.com and click on the torch. The flame's on your right. Click on the flame. And you can see firsthand this gun being fired. And I'm very uncomfortable with the fact that you can print a gun. I mean, you think about, even as a parent, you know, so many parents are struggling with children that are rebellious. It's like, what are you doing in there? Nothing. It's like, are you printing a gun in there?
Right.
No, I'm just playing cards. It's like, are you on that computer again? Are you printing a bomb or something in there? I mean, you think about it. And it's like,
thank God we didn't have computers.
Right. And it's like, oh my goodness, it's time for a reboot. And when things reboot, even though Rome was a powerful, most powerful city around, and it was ruling, you know, so many things, it fell.
Yeah.
It just fell. And all of a sudden people begin to leave all that stuff and begin to even leave these big buildings and stuff because they just didn't work. And you had to be close to the elements that so you could live, and just things reboot. I believe the Dark Ages begin to come around that time. And we're at that point. I mean, look what we're creating. Look what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, men who are creating the image and the likeness of God will always be able to create. But God can frustrate that. You know, God will frustrate the message of the gospel, frustrates the intellect of the intelligent and, you know, confounds the wise. And be careful about being so interested, because we're talking about what God's, what is God's perspective, God's news behind the news. And so we can look back at what man did with the Tower of Babel. They were able to create it. We look back at Genesis where he says we're creating the image and likeness of him who is a creator. So he's a creator. We're a creator. But we can create evil or we can create good. Now, we're called to lay down our life for our brother. We're called to love and to forgive. And so we're not printing guns. I mean, that's not what we would be focused on as a believer.
Right.
And so this is kind of a God perspective of that. If we're printing organs, we're printing guns, we're printing food. I mean, think about it. Yeah, print me a burger.
Yeah.
With French fries. And print it with less grease. You know, no fat.
Right. No calories.
No calories. Who would ever thunk it, huh? Think about it. It wasn't long ago that we had the Pony Express. You know, we had like teletype trains. Mm-hmm. And now we're printing food, organs, and guns. It sounds like the Tower of Babel, right?
Yeah.
We'll be right back after these messages. You're listening to VFN Radio. Don't forget you can visit us at VFNTV.com. What religious rights do teachers have in school? This is Law and Justice with Jay Sekulo.
My school's real receptive of me with my Christian faith and the things I can do, but at this graduate class I've been taking, the professor has come out telling all the other people in the class that they can't wear a cross around their neck. One of the students mentioned that when they pray, when they eat lunch with their kids, a student asked them, what are you doing? And this teacher said, well, I can't talk to you about it. And I'd just like for you to maybe talk a little bit about the teacher's rights.
This idea that you have a complete surrender of religious freedom rights at the school is just incorrect. The unfortunate thing here is you've got a graduate-level course. This is teachers being taught by teachers on how to teach, and they're being told, basically, if you engage in any kind of religious discussion, it's off-limits, it's, you know, inappropriate, you can't say a prayer before a meal, don't wear a cross to the classroom. That's some of the hostility that's out there. It's very unfortunate. It's really misinformation.
Visit us at ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org.
The interesting thing, I guess you could say it's interesting about the Lord that you discover is, mm-hmm. he gives us a chance to join him.
Many chances.
But he doesn't force us.
All right.
He will send prophets to us. He'll say, matter of fact, I'm coming to you right now. I'm probably letting you know, if you don't know yet, mm-hmm. that if the church does not arise, if she doesn't awake, things as we know it in the nation called America, the United States of America, is going to change. It's changing before our eyes, but a third great awakening, a massive national revival can change it, but we can drop the ball. Mm-hmm. I mean, right now, we've dropped the ball, and if we drop the ball, God will just move. The cloud will move. It's moving as we speak into India, into China. As a matter of fact, listen to Peter Wagner and Steve Hill talk specifically about that. I'll be right back.
And say to this should not offend anyone. What this should challenge you. This should challenge me, okay? I'm a young man, okay? And I'm speaking to many. You may say, well, you know, I'm this. Peter, you're up in, I don't know, 70, 80s or whatever, but the bottom line is you got the fire of an 18-year-old, okay? and the vision, and you see the world laid out like God sees it laid out. He goes, listen, if you don't take this and run with it, if you don't take this pure gospel that I've given you, and it's simple, the gospel is not complicated. If you don't take this and run with it, I'm going to pass the ball to somebody
else. You're
going
to give it to somebody else. That's right.
I'm going to give it to somebody else, and they're going to run with it.
Exactly right.
That's what happened. Let me just ask you.
We need more people swallowed by whales like Jonah. He was going to take it from Jonah, but Jonah learned his lesson.
He learned his lesson, and I think revival came out of all
that's
that.
That's right.
You think about it. Why would we have to be swallowed by a whale? Why do we have to go? He said, I will not go in the middle. I will not respond to the call. I'm not going to do it. But when he finally did it, Nineveh, a great city, turned around. You don't think, and this is what this is what God told Jonah. Should I not be concerned? Mm-hmm. Should I not be concerned? Should I not be concerned about this great city? Do you don't think God's concerned about the great nation called America? He cares. He loves the American people. He wants them to know him. He wants the church to rise. But you know what? If we don't stand up, if we don't say, you know, this is me, I'm ready to do it. God, use me. Here I am. Send me. You can find out. Listen, we have been preparing for you. We have been preparing for you. You know, all the way from training you up to rightly relating you, to bringing you into the harp and bowl ministry of Revelations 5:8, so you can pray and watch and make sure, you know, that you stand in the midst of what's coming. We've raised you up in unity, what we call the due space, being able to be together continually with all the family. We raised you up and be able to get connected and rightly related and get discipled, and not only get discipled, but to go through VFNU. Vine Fellowship Network University to train you again in the simplicity. It's so simple. It's not complicated. Religion complicates things, but it was so simple that the fishermen were doing it, and it just blew the mind of all those that invested so much in gaining so much knowledge that there were no longer any use in the kingdom of God. As a matter of fact, it reminds me of my spiritual father, Ken Summerall. This is what he says. He says two things. One is, he says, every time I began to get insecure about things when I was in ministry, when I was young, I would go get a degree. Mm. I would get more education. He said, I was dying by degrees. I had to unlearn everything I learned so that God could use me. He says something else in his book called The Flexible Wineskin. He says, listen, if it ever gets like that, mm-hmm. I hope you, those that are related to me, I hope you will step away from that so that you can continue on with the call that God's placed on your life. Find out more at vfnfamily.org. Listen, let's do it. Let's believe God. Let's raise up for a day such as this. Don't look around for people to be your cheerleader. If they're not going to go, they're not going to cheer you on. But if you will go, if you'll be that voice, God will use you. vfnfamily.org. VFN, that's V Victor, vfnfamily.org. Welcome back to VFN Radio. I'm your host, Greg Lancaster, and joining me is the producer, Pat. You know, we're just talking about 3D printing. They're printing guns. Do we really want to do that? You got to catch up if you missed that segment right there. But Dr. Ben Carson, I don't know if you saw him before. We've actually, you heard him on VFN Radio as we was at the prayer breakfast, the national prayer breakfast, and he began to speak just wisdom. And it's not the first time he's ever done it, but the way they covered it this time, it seemed like the first time he'd ever done it.
Right.
But it's like, I mean, he's a brain surgeon. I guess it's going to take a brain surgeon to bring wisdom right here. But he's with Dr. James Robinson on Life Today, and he's doing an interview right here. But you got to hear Dr. Carson, and you can hear this in its entirety on the VFN Torch at VFNTV.com. But listen, this is Dr. Ben Carson, and he's talking about his early experience, you know, as a young man and how he was angry and he felt like he had all these rights, but that's before he met God. Listen up.
You know, I was one of those people who thought they had a lot of rights. And the more rights you think you have, the more likely someone is to infringe upon them. And people were always infringing on my rights. And I remember once a fella hit me with a pebble. It didn't hurt. But I was incensed that he would dare hit me, and I picked up a large rock, hurled it at his face, broke his glasses, almost put his eye out. Another fellow was trying to get me to wear to close my locker. I didn't want it closed. I struck him in the forehead with my fist, still had the lock in my hand, put a 3-inch gash in his forehead. My mother was trying to get me to wear something. I didn't want to wear it. Picked up a hammer, went to hit her in the head with it. And fortunately, my brother caught it from behind. You know, other than that, I was a pretty good kid. But, you know, when I was 14, you know, another youngster angered me, and I had a large camping knife called Camper. And I tried to stab him in the abdomen. And fortunately, he had on a large metal belt buckle under his clothing. And the knife blade struck it with such force that it broke, and he fled in terror. But I was more horrified than he, and I locked myself in the bathroom, and I had turned things around academically by then, but I realized that with a temper like that, I would never realize my dream of becoming a physician. I knew my options were jail, reform school, or the grave, and none of those appealed to me. So I just said, Lord, you got to help me. I cannot control my temper. And I picked up the Bible and opened it to the book of Proverbs. And there were all these verses in there about fools. And it looked like they all described me. And then there were verses also about anger. For instance, Proverbs 19:19, there's no point getting an angry man out of trouble because he's just going to get right back in it. But encouraging verses like Proverbs 16:32, mightier is the man who can control his temper than the man who can conquer a city.
Wow.
And, you know, it spoke to me in a powerful way. And I realized while I was in that bathroom that to punch somebody, to kick down a door was not a sign of strength. It was a sign of weakness. It meant that you were easily manipulated by the environment and by other people, and that you were, of all people, the weakest if you were the angriest. And I also came to understand that if you can step out of the middle of the circle and not have everything be about you, then you won't be angry all the time. You know, people who are always angry, are people who are selfish, because it's always about them. Somebody did something to them. Somebody took their thing. Somebody's in their space. And if you can step out of that, you have great control. And when I came out of that bathroom after 3 hours, the temper was gone. I've never had another problem with it since that time. And some people say, well, you just learn how to hide it. But I got to tell you, when the Lord fixes it, he doesn't just paint it over. He fixes it from the inside. You know, my mother, if anybody should have felt like a victim, she was the one. You know, one of 24 children, getting married at age 13, trying to escape desperate poverty in rural Tennessee, moving to Detroit with my father, subsequently discovering that he was a bigamist, had another family, she only having a third grade education, and thrust upon her the responsibility of raising two sons in inner city Detroit. And yet, she would not allow herself to be a victim. She would work as hard as she needed to work. She did not want to be on welfare because she was observant, and she noticed that no one she ever saw go on welfare came off of it, and they didn't lead the kind of life that she wanted. She cleaned people's homes. She didn't resent that they had very nice homes, but she was observant. She said, why do they have very nice homes? Because they read, because they study, because they plan, they strategize. So one day she comes home, she turns off the TV and says, you guys are going to read books. Now, we weren't very happy about that, as you might imagine. In today's culture, we probably would have called the authorities on it. But, but you know, back in those days, you had to do what your parents told you to do. And but interestingly enough, after a while, I actually began to enjoy reading those books. And it was an escape for me, because I could be anybody. I could do anything. I began to know things that nobody else knew. It was very, very empowering. And I used to hate poverty before I started reading. But as I read more and more, particularly about successful people, I didn't hate poverty anymore, because I realized that I could change that. You know, if you can change something, it doesn't bother you nearly as much as if you think you're stuck. And unfortunately, we have a lot of people in our nation today who think they're stuck. They're not stuck. There are opportunities, but they're not seeing them. And we have a system that says, there, there, you poor little thing, you can't do better, we'll take care of you. And it keeps them in that mindset. That is not a good place to be, I can tell you from experience. You know, a couple of points. First of all, I was doing an interview on NPR, and the correspondent said, Dr. Carson, I notice you don't talk about race very often. Why is that? And I said, it's because I'm a neurosurgeon. And she looked at me quite quizzically. What the heck does that have to do with it? And I said, you see, when I take someone to the operating room and I cut that scalp and I peel the skin back and I take off that bone flap and I open the dura, I'm operating on the thing that makes that person who they are. The cover doesn't make them who they are. It's the brain that makes them who they are. And when you're able to think deeply, you can see past superficial things, and you begin to understand what's truly important. And that's why you and I are in harmony. The cover doesn't mean anything. It's what's inside that makes all the difference in the world.
That's so important. You can catch this interview in its entirety, and that's the first of three parts that we'll have on VFN Radio. But go to the VFN Torch, go to VFNTV.com and click on the torch. The flame on your right-hand side will take you to the light of what's going on. Dr. Ben Carson, just such great wisdom. You know, people look at people like Dr. Carson today, and as we're watching the shock on Pat's face, is they start thinking, well, he's just perfect. He has never had any issues. Listen, outside of God, we all have issues.
That's right.
And I think about T.D. Jakes when he used to say, you know, Lord, help me from me. Forget about Satan. If you know, if Satan's not pulling my strings, something else is, you know, help me, God. And I kind of forget how you said it, but understanding that it wasn't until he found God that he was able to begin to deal with these things in his life. And he realized the very things that were being promulgated upon him was the things that he hated, but he didn't hate it anymore. He realized that I'm not stuck here. Mm-hmm. And where we presently are, we're not stuck here. We can decide, make different decisions in our life to come out of where we are. And it's just so encouraging to hear. And the sad thing about it is, you know, he spoke truth when he said, you know, those are the days that you had to do what your parents had to say. We probably would have called the law on it by then. Obviously, if he would swing a hammer at his mother, you know, as a rebellious child, that he would have used whatever necessary to get his way. And that's what's going on today.
Right.
And if your parents are disciplining you, you need to thank them for that. Mm-hmm. Thank them that they're willing to do what Dr. Carson's mother did for him and lay down some guidelines and some rules and some boundaries. And if you're upset with them now, you know, for bringing discipline in your life, realize that in the future you won't be, because if you submit to that discipline, you know, godly type discipline, then you're going to be productive and healthy. But if they don't discipline you, these are the kids that come back and begin to hate their parents for not disciplining them. And it's like, my goodness. I used to say hate and resentment disguised as love. Hate and resentment disguised as love, because they need, that's, you know, train a child in the way they should go, you know. And it's, you know, no discipline seems pleasant at the time, but it's purposeful. Mm-hmm. We got to learn to tell ourselves no. It's amazing how many people just can't, you know, don't have any self-discipline, and they have to have a taskmaster over them say, it's time to get up. Mm-hmm. It's time to do this. It's time to do that. And it's like, you think about it, you know, as Christians, we are supposed to abide with the Lord and let him lead us gently with a sweet, soft voice of the Holy Spirit. He doesn't yell at us. Mm-mm. And there's times when he may rebuke us or something's happening. We just need to receive that. But the majority of the time, it's just gentle promptings from his Spirit. And you can't be rebellious and follow gentle promptings. If you have to be forced to do what's right, I mean, you're not right.
Right.
You know, and that would be prideful. Mm-hmm. And it was amazing. I mean, think about how he's been transformed. We're going to hear a lot of great wisdom in these next two parts of those interviews. But make sure you can catch it and you can watch the whole segment with him and Dr. James Dobson. You can get to it on The Torch. Go to VFNTV.com and click on The Torch. You know, we were talking earlier about the prophetic storm, the perfect storm that John Paul Jackson was speaking about in 2008 and 2010. And there's so many things happening. You know, his lists are some of them. And some of the things God has shown us is some of them. And it just, he's just got to making himself know. Listen, God lets his people know before he does something. Mm-hmm. Realize the reason why we're hearing all this is because he's doing something and about to do something. And God allows minimum force necessary to get us to turn back to him. If you have not yet heard this generation, don't give up on a pagan generation. You can watch it. It's about our present day and time. On VFN TV, you've got to see it, because a generation after Joshua's generation gave up on God.
Right.
They didn't give up. They didn't even took the knowledge of God. They didn't acknowledge him. They were paganistic. And it doesn't say how many afterwards, but it's right after. Everybody, all of Joshua's generation went on to be with the Lord. So you got a whole bunch of variances there, depending on how old everybody is. And obviously Joshua was older than the young ones because he had to wait for their parents to
move on.
and we find out that the things that God does, and God, listen, God will allow raiders to come in and raid you of your stuff and your things and everything that you wouldn't acknowledge that God had given to you through honoring him with the first fruits from that and not worshiping them, but worshiping him and thanking him for them and that and stuff and whatever. But if we don't respond, things get worse, and we're seeing all these weather patterns, these wild weather patterns. But John Paul Jackson, if you missed that, you got to go to The Torch and see The Perfect Storm, and I believe also on VFN TV, mm-hmm. The Elijah Storm.
Yeah.
And you can hear, it's just filled with prophetic teachings. You can know, think about this. You can put down your electronics. You can turn off your distractions. You can be like Dr. Carson is doing today and do what's right. And you can find out right now. You could find out by going to VFN TV. Go to VFNTV.com and watch the prophetic teachings on VFN TV. And you can hear firsthand prophecy, which is history in advance. Some of the things have already happened. Some of the things are happening, and some of them are about to happen. But one thing that was said by John Paul Jackson of Streams Ministries, and you get to him at streamsministry.org or AWTV, but he has, also you can get to The Perfect Storm at VFNTV.com. On the bottom there, you can see a banner to be able to get directly to the update. There's so many things going on. They have a website dedicated just to the updates that's going on. But we have ice now. We have droughts going on. We have fires, you know, 4 months ahead of time in California out there. We have earthquakes. We have hurricanes up in New Jersey, you know, Hurricane Sandy. I mean, I can't even name them all. There's so many of them. But now we actually have ice that's plowing into lakeside houses. The ice is moving. Listen to CBN News.
Well, finally, Pat, lakeside homes in northern Minnesota were damaged over the weekend by what's being called an ice wave. Take a look at this. Strong winds pushed the huge sheets of ice from Lake Mille Lacs ashore. Residents say the sound of the ice coming towards the houses was like a train chugging on tracks. The ice collided with homes and fences, plowing through glass doors and windows. In one lakeside town in Canada, the ice reached about 27 feet high. It crashed through 27 buildings and destroyed 12 homes. Amazing, Pat.
Wow.
People would say, is this the end of the world? I don't know if it's the end of the world, but we've got some strange weather going on. And I've never heard of anything like that before. Have you?
Never. Not ever. But yeah. Also, I think just even the weather patterns for this spring have been bizarre. It's still cold in the Midwest and the North. Unbelievable.
The coldest April on record. I think probably the coldest May on record. And then all of a sudden it's gotten hot, then it's gotten cold again. I mean, it's just crazy. Storm tornado. And we haven't got many hurricanes yet, but vicious tornadoes. It's amazing weather, but
don't hang your jackets up yet.
I'm not putting any biblical significance on it because I don't know what they are, but nevertheless, it's strange.
It really is.
That's so important because you're looking at things that was prophesied about by John Paul Jackson. If you haven't yet, hopefully maybe soon we'll get a chance to revisit that again. But you can go to the Elijah Storm. Go to VFNTV.com and select the Elijah Storm. And there's for 10 years that I was literally driven, compelled by the Holy Spirit to prophesy Malachi 4, 5, and 6. And it ends with, or else I'll smite the earth with a curse. And it ended, God literally showed up in my office and his presence was so strong. I stood at attention. And he told me that they didn't respond, move on. And right after that is when the hurricane started hitting in Haiti.
Tsunami?
No, the earthquake. Earthquake hit in Haiti. And it just began. Mm-hmm. All these things, just the rhythm of these things began. So if somebody says, well, that means everything's going to fall apart. Well, you know, like Pat Robinson saying, you know, who knows? But based on what prophetically has been said is these things will happen until we repent, and they'll get closer and closer together and more often, more frequent. And they'll be like a little bit here, a little bit there. This area might not be hit, but that area will be hit, and they'll just continue on. And this is the mercies of God going. Mm-hmm. And it very well could be you're going to repent.
Yeah, one way or the other.
Yeah, I'm going to have a people. And which is great to see. It's hopeful to see that God's allowing things to happen. He says, you know, when I send a plague, when locusts devour the land, when I send a plague amongst my people, and this is what he's saying, that if my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and turn from their wicked ways, then I'll hear from heaven and I'll heal their land. And this is important. If that was your home, when you go there, you can see this video on the VFN Torch. Go to VFNTV.com. It's called, you know, Ice Waves Plowing into Lakeside Homes at the Perfect Storm. Understand that with that, imagine this huge wave of ice, as they described it, just beginning to, and it's like ice is like a mountain.
Yeah.
Imagine a mountain just pushing up and shoving its way into your home. And they're standing in their living room with this piece of this huge ice that just pushed its way right through the front of their house. Listen, why does it have to be everybody's home? Why does it have to be your home before we listen and humble ourselves? Let's just humble ourselves today Let's stand up and begin to say, you know what? I see the sword being fashioned against us. I see the storm coming. Let's begin to warn people so that they repent and this whole thing stops and God relents.
We'll be right back after these messages. You're listening to VFN Radio. Don't forget you can visit us at VFNTV.com.
What if, suddenly, you had an extra 2 hours a week to do whatever you wanted, just for yourself? I'm John Fuller, and this is Focus on the Family Minute. Erin Davis is a young mom with two boys and another on the way, but she figured out how to schedule 2 hours of free time every week.
I have two other mom friends. We do something called Mom Swap every week, where one mom gets 2 hours off, the other two moms keep the other two kids, and it's a lifesaver, and so you've got to do that. And when I say to moms, you've got to find other mom friends, they say, I just don't know how, I don't know anybody like that. They expect that to just fall into their lap. But listen, in our culture where this isn't valued, it's not going to fall into your lap. You're going to have to seek it out, and it is worth the hard work to find other Christian moms.
Coordinating a mom swap won't be easy, but as Erin said, it'll be worth the effort, and you'll be a better mom for it. We've got more encouragement for your journey raising kids at focusonthefamily.com/parenting.
It is amazing how this is all working. It's people just like you, friends like you, that stand with us and understand, you know, we've got to make a difference in our generation, that stand with us prayerfully and financially, that just partner on a monthly basis to financially build a foundation that where we can carry this message not only to the nation of America, but to the nations of the world. It's amazing how so many people are being encouraged by a simple gift of a few dollars a month, $25 a month, $50 a month, whatever it is. And you know what? Together, if you're having difficulty in how to present the gospel to this generation, partner with us, and we together at VFN TV and the Daily Radio Program will bring the gospel to this nation and this nation by God's grace to the Lord. Go to VFNTV.com and click on giving. VFNTV.com and click on giving. Man, I gotta tell you about this. That my grandfather, my dad's father, used to live with us. And funny, I mean, it was hilarious and some of the things. But he loved to cook everything in the pressure cooker. He loved to cook everything in a pressure cooker. And he was out there at this place that I'm talking about. And he was cooking collard greens. He was cooking collard greens and on the stove in a pressure cooker. And a pressure cooker, for those who don't know, probably it's not a microwave. It is a pot that you put water in and you seal it so tight the air can't get out of it. And if it does, it comes out of a small little area and it builds pressure up inside of it. Mm-hmm. It was the old fashioned microwave.
Yeah.
It was the first microwave. And so it's a bomb on your stove, basically.
Right.
That you're creating some hydrogen bomb, you know, some water bomb on your stove. And anyway, so he's cooking in the kitchen or whatever. We had these real high ceilings and these beams up real high. And all of a sudden we hear this kaboom! The explosion that took place. And we come running, you know, in there to find out what's going on. Man, there was collard greens all over the place. There was greens in the ceiling, greens everywhere. And he didn't have before hairs on his head. He had greens on his head. There was greens everywhere.
Oh, no.
He tried to take a peek to see if the greens were done yet, and he opened the lid.
He opened the lid. I was on,
and it went kaboom! Oh my goodness, that was so funny. You don't, when you're cooking in a pressure cooker, you just got to trust. You got to move by faith. I think it's done. You take it off. You take it over to the sink. You let cold water run over it until you got a peace with God. And then you open it because it's a bomb. It's literally a bomb. But I thought it was just that was that.
Speaking of grandfathers, this is hilarious. Must be a grandfather thing with explosions. Yeah. I remember my grandfather, he used to shave. And he used
Your
to
grandfather
heat.
Shaved?
Yeah, he shaved. He shaved. But he used to shave with, he used to heat the can. I guess I don't use cans anymore, but I guess they still do. But the shaving cream can. And he would heat it up.
Yeah, we actually still use cans.
I don't use shaving cream. I don't use shaving cream.
That's right. He's a dry shaver.
Oh,
let's get back to the story. Come on.
You're so delicate. You're a delicate flower. Okay, anyway, go ahead.
So he's heating up this can with his in hot water.
Right.
And I guess he's been doing this for years.
Hot shave.
Well, yeah, it's shaving cream. Hot shave. Mm-hmm. But the thing explodes. The can explodes.
Is it on the stove?
No, this was, I guess, in the sink in the bathroom somewhere. I don't know what he was doing. I was a kid.
Right.
I woke up and I thought it snowed inside the house. Right. There was shaving cream everywhere. Yeah. All over his face, all over his body. I'm trying to picture this. And his shocked look. Oh, it was hilarious.
So this is the grandfather that used to mess with a lot.
Oh,
is that the one you did that thing to?
All those things, too. Amazing. It's amazing it bulge on in water.
Yeah, right.
We were at each other with water guns. He'd chase me down and all kinds of stuff. We had some funny moments.
Welcome back to VFN Radio's Extra Hour. I'm your host, Greg Lancaster. Wow. Icebergs, waves of ice are pushing their way into houses in Minnesota. Crazy things are going on. Really, it just shows us how in control God is, because he told us ahead of time. And you can go to VFNTV.com and just scroll down a little bit and you'll see the perfect storm and you can see exactly what we're talking about. Or you can go to VFNTV.com and watch VFN TV, The Elijah Storm and the Other Prophetic Teachings. Prophecy is history in advance. If you want to know your future, listen to the prophetic words of God. And futures can change if we respond to what God is saying. Things can change.
Mm-hmm.
There is a particular author that wrote this book. It's called Has the Western World Lost God? Has the Western World Lost God? And her name is Mary Epstad, I believe it is, Epperstad. And she makes a real, real good point here, and I want to talk about it. But first, just listen up to the segment.
How did the Western world lose God? Author Mary Epperstad takes a fresh look at the question in her book, How the West Really Lost God, and she joins us now. Mary, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Charlene.
Now, you say it's the collapse of the family that led to a decline in Christianity in the West. Is that right?
The conventional storyline is that once people became more educated, more enlightened, more rational, they wouldn't need God anymore, and that Christianity would just go the way of the dinosaur. This is what a lot of sophisticated people have believed. This is the storyline handed down by the Enlightenment, and most recently by the new atheists. But the fact is, this story doesn't hold up for a lot of reasons. So if the conventional storyline about Christianity's decline doesn't work, what does? That's where the book comes in. What I try to do is isolate the times when Christianity has been strong, the times when it's been vibrant. And when it is, you always see the same thing. Strong families make strong churches. Weak families make weak churches. And given the fractured family world we live in, we should expect to see religious decline. But this is very different from the conventional storyline, which says that this decline is inevitable. It's not.
Definitely. Well, you just mentioned about family. You also talk in the book how closely intertwined faith and family are. Why is that so?
We're talking about a religion that begins with the birth of a baby, and it goes on to have a holy family. Who are main characters in this story. So the family as an idea saturates Christianity. Why does this matter? Well, it matters now because when we live in a world where a lot of people don't live in natural families, when they live in fractured families or atomized households of one, that story makes less sense. The fracturing of the family ends up fracturing the churches too.
Definitely. Now, Mary, why should the secular-minded or the agnostic be concerned with the collapse of the faith and family?
Because what religious believers are doing in the public square benefits everybody, Charlene, and there's a lot of secular social science on this that I cite in the book. If you are a religious believer, you are more likely to contribute to charity, you're more likely to donate your time, you're even more likely to donate blood. Than if you are secular. And I'm not saying that to knock the secular folks. This is all well-established social science. Conversely, if you take a society like France, very secular, there's very little charitable giving. So it turns out that if you have a creed that tells you to take care of the poor and the sick and the old, you are a little more likely to do that. So that's just one example of how religious believers contribute to society. They also contribute in another way. They make it less likely that the substitute family, known as the modern welfare state, has to come in and pick up the pieces. Strong families benefit everybody in society, not only those who believe. So those are two examples of why everybody has a dog in this fight, whether they want to or not. And I think it's really short-sighted of the new atheists and the aggressively secular people to be beating up on Christians in the public square for this reason, because what they're doing benefits everybody.
Definitely. What would you say are the solutions to all these problems?
Well, I think it helps to understand the nature of the problem. I think it might help, for example, pastors and other people concerned with the churches to understand that they need to look in those pews and figure out how to help young families, families that are struggling, with very grassroots sorts of things like meal drop-offs and carpools and all the things that make it a little easier to have a family in this world that is increasingly hostile to families. So that's one thing. But looking at the bigger picture, I think the scenario out there is optimistic, because I think that the modern welfare state, which again has been bankrolling the fractured family for decades now, is going to turn out to be unsustainable. When the time comes that the welfare state is reined in, or that there is a major rethinking of what it really reasonably can do, I think what will happen is what always happens in times of adversity. People will look more immediately around them. They will look to home. They will look to church. Adversity drives people to church. We saw this right after 9/11. And when the welfare state and its illusions of being able to provide what the natural family can provide is reconsidered, I think you'll see a reconsideration of family and faith as well, and possibly the seeds of a religious revival.
Excellent. Very good information. Mary Eberstadt, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Charlene.
That's so exciting, because we're coming to the end of this thing. It looks like things are coming to a head where we're not going to be able to continue to sustain such dysfunction. We won't be able to afford. It's like, well, you know, you owe me that. It's like, well, even if I felt I did, if I can't do it, I can't do it. So all of a sudden now you're going to have to begin to come accountable to God and what you're doing. And so where we're seeing this thing reboot, as we were saying earlier in the program, is even in this, because the question she's asking with the book, has the Western world lost God? That's so important. Right. And I love the fact how, you know, I think it's 70-75% of all Americans surveyed said that the biggest issue with America is the absence of the Father.
Yeah.
But you got to study all of that. You can't just say, you know, that mean old man is like, well, you know, he could be mean. He could be dysfunctional. But he also could have been functional, but society didn't support his role there. Or your mother didn't support his role there. And there's a whole bunch of factors that come into the context of that. And yes, you know, he could be wrong. Things could happen. It could be dysfunctional or whatever like that. But absent is absent, whether you're pushed out or seduced out, you know, whatever it is. Still, America says that 70%+ of the issue facing America is the absence of the Father, which is really interesting. We're going to get a chance to go back to the 60s and look what began then, which is the fruit of what we're seeing today. And we're going to have actual people you'll see today in their older lives, were in their younger lives, marching on the streets of America, declaring that men weren't that important, that husbands were optional, that if I'm going to stay married, he's going to sign a contract, he's going to do his fair share, mm-hmm. and I have the right over my body, I'll take his child if I want to, and abort it if I want to. And all these things began to happen in the 60s and the early 70s. And now today, they're blaming society's saying the issue is the absence of the Father. But if you'll go back and what you'll hear when we begin to talk about this, when we do get to it, there's so many things going on, that you'll say, oh my goodness, there was a strategy to destroy the family. There was a strategy to destroy marriage. And here we are today, where they're at the same time where they're saying the issue with the family today is the absence of the father. The issue with America is the absence of the father. At the same time, we're saying that they're optional. Mm-hmm. It's like, what's, you got to pick your side of the fight here. You can't be on both sides of it. You got to say either God's created the father and the father's role is a good, positive, God created things, seeing that he is one, God is a father. Or you can say, well, they're optional, you don't need them, and that you're the blame. It's your fault.
Right.
You know, I was like, oh, I don't want to take the fault, but I definitely want to take the leadership in this thing. It's like, fathers are so significant that God even called them one. Fathers are so significant that the last thing said in the old covenant was Malachi. Prophetically said, it was Malachi chapter 4, verse 5 and 6. He says, before the great and dreadful day of the Lord comes, that I will send Elijah, and he will turn the hearts of the fathers to the children and the children to the fathers, or else I'll smite the earth with a curse. All of a sudden, here comes Jesus on the scene, and he has already walked out his life, born of Mary, lived a sinless life, about to start his ministry, and all of a sudden, someone comes in the spirit of Elijah. His name is John the Baptist, and he begins to say, he begins to prophesy, Malachi chapter 4, verse 5 and 6. He says, behold, the one that's going to turn into the hearts of the fathers to the children and the children to the fathers. Listen, they're so significant that everything that you can imagine is trying to attack the father's role. And Dr. Dobson, and you can find out more about this, and hopefully it's related, not related to the article below if you're listening on the Off the Torch or on the app, is that Dr. Dobson, who understands family, wrote the book Fatherless. It's entitled Fatherless, and it's the first part that leads to Godless. The last part of the series is Godless. And it's amazing, and it ends with, the whole book is about all this, what things have gotten to, the point they've gotten to, which is life itself is unvaluable and it's optional. And it ends with understanding that the father's role was so significant. The reason why society fell apart, the reason why things are not working right, the reason why we ended up the way we are is because the father's absence in the family. It's called Fatherless by Dr. James Dobson, the founder of Focus on the Family.
You've been listening to VFN Radio. I'm your host, Greg Lancaster, and we're so glad that you joined us. Don't forget, you can catch us at VFNTV.com on your mobile applications. You can download it at VFNTV.com. Go to your Apple apps, your Android apps, and all those wonderful apps. We enjoyed our time together. And don't forget, 24/7 on VFN Radio. God bless.